present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome yet again to the news quiz. This is my last time in the chair, but from next week, Simon Hoggart will be your guide and comforter, saying things like, we start with an advertisement in the Daily Star, read by Charlotte Green.
It seems there are three types of accountant working in Sheffield's education department. Those who can add up and those who can't.
Well, thank you, everyone who sent that. And now, let's... All eight of you. Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Guardian columnist Francis Wheen, and one of the few MPs with a sense of humour, Roy Hattersley. Facing them on my left, the oldest inhabitant, the lovely Alan Corran, and the bearded wonder, Andy Hamilton. Before we start round one, here's a correction in The Independent.
In an article on page 4 of yesterday's Independent, we stated that Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber is farming ostriches. He isn't.
Well, somebody is. Anyway, thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Clegg of Suffolk, for sending us that. Francis, you get the first question. It's this. Who refused to answer today's leading question?
Oh, I think this is that man, Brian Mawinney.
It is.
The man with the paint. Who was on the Today programme, interviewed by Sue McGregor. I think she was trying to be helpful. She said, well, don't you need to do something rather dramatic to win the local elections? And he said this was the most outrageous smear, the suggestion that they might ever win an election, and stormed off, huffing and puffing, and particularly because she also mentioned that the previous time they were down in the dumps, they'd ditched their leader in order to win the next election. And he said, there's no point in doing that because look where it got us. We just got this man Major instead. And anyway, he's complaining to the BBC because you're not allowed to suggest that they might possibly ever lose any vote whatsoever. Is this right?
That's quite absolutely right.
Did you see, his people were in court this week, all those students who threw paint at him.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just trying to make him look a bit brighter and jollier.
And they've all been cheer up his image, you think? Maybe. Well, this is all about Omar Winey. Sorry, Omar Winney, the Tory party chairman and editor of their magazine, Witch Hunt. Mr. Mawinney refused point blank to answer Sue McGregor's question about the leadership. What refreshing honesty. A politician who openly admits he won't answer the questions. However, we move on to Roy. What end-of-line goods went up for sale?
Oh, this is another British Rail sale.
It is.
And it ought to be related to the wonderful Mrs. Short. Mrs. Short, or is she Miss Short, is our spokesman.
Uh-huh.
And this enables me to make a joke, because there's two Shorts in the Labour Party. There's Clare, who speaks on transport, and there's the thought that Tony Blair is two policies short of a programme. That ought to get me into trouble.
But you don't
Let's
care.
Let's hope so. It didn't get me a laugh. It's selling British Rail.
It is. It's a sale of rail track aimed mainly at private investors. The sale includes only fixed, immovable assets like track, signal boxes and the station staff at Charing Cross. The successful bidders for the fourth bridge went out and painted the town red, and then they had to go out and do it all again the next day. Similar question, Andy. Who was given short shrift for speaking her mind?
Well, can I begin my answer by saying that I've actually...
Oh. God.
Been away on holiday this week. I have read some of the papers since I got back on the Wednesday. I'm in a very good mood, actually.
Good.
But I do happen to know this one. So Alan can take that piece of paper back. He's so competitive. He's worried. Yes, this is Claire Short.
Yes, indeed.
Who apparently on a Sunday, one of those Sunday morning... political chat shows, not sure which one it was, said that she wouldn't mind too much, you would expect, as a high earner. I mean, MPs are paid very well, aren't they, Roy?
Excessively well.
Yes, absolutely. You heard it here first.
10% of what you get.
Roy Hattersley votes for pay cut. You heard it here first. She said something comparatively harmless sounding, it seemed to me, about being prepared to pay more tax, and of course the Tories seized on it, and then she was summoned to the Blairite presence And he knocked her about a bit with a baseball bat and said, and said, don't do it again. And she came out and said he was terribly nice about it. And now they're all going to sing the same tune, apparently.
This is the Labour Party's in-house production of Get Shorty. Starring Claire Short, whose latest attempt to talk her way out of the shadow cabinet was aired on GMTV earlier this week. Miss Short said she could easily afford to pay more tax under a Labour government, but Tony Blair soon put her straight on that one. Apparently she based her calculations on getting a cabinet minister's salary. Alan, have a listen to this.
Oh, the brave old Duke of York, he had 10,000 men. He marched them up to the top of the hill and he marched them down again. And when they were up, they were up. And when they were down, they were down. And when they were only halfway up, they were neither up nor down.
An unfortunate lyric, that is.
Right.
The question is, who was dropped from a great highness? You didn't need a question, did you?
It was the bestest of times, it was the worstest of times. Given the size of her divorce settlement, she'll be called the Sale of Two Titties, I've no doubt. I mean, the worst thing about all that bestest stuff is when she came on television in Verbier and said, this concerns only the Duke and I. And I thought, God, she's got custody of the children. These things are going to grow up totally illiterate if they're left with this terrible woman, all that bestest nonsense. Well, I suppose it was the vindication, once again, of John Major's judgment, because on Sunday he said the monarchy is absolutely solid, rock hard, nothing, no problems, and the next day the Yorks threw in the sponge, which has seen some use in her case, I might say. And I shan't go any further than that. It's a tragic story of our time.
It is. It is the shock news that Prince Andrew and Fergie are to divorce. The Queen was said to be concerned on hearing the news, so concerned that she started a Mexican wave in Westminster Abbey. In the light of publicity surrounding Fergie's extramarital activities, there was some unfortunate misunderstanding about them being constantly apart for 2 years. Until it was explained, the petition meant the Duke and Duchess. And the score at the end of round one, and this is probably the last time I shall ever say it, but as they always are on the news quiz, it's 4-4. Francis, another question for you. Who has been judged to be out of touch?
I think this is the Lord Chief Justice. Well, he's not out of touch, of course. He's one of these new rock and roll judges that have been brought in. But he, Lord Taylor...
That's right.
...has said that... judges shouldn't give the impression that they're from another planet. Very easy mistake to make, I find, whenever I've been up in front of them with their interesting outfits. But he says it causes great embarrassment when judges sit there and say, who is Gaza? And what is Oasis? And take me to your leader. And that sort of thing. There's little telltale signs. So they're all being sent off for retraining to mug up on Blur and Britpop and football players.
That's right. This is the advice that judges should try and communicate more with the public, although in such circumstances, one knock for yes, two for no is usually appropriate. Lord Chief Justice Taylor said he wants the judiciary to have a wider popular appeal, announcing the appointment of Judge Chegwin and Mr. Mr. Justice Lineker. However, judges hit back, saying they might not be as popular as entertainers such as Bruce Forsyth, but at least they have more convincing hairstyle. Roy, whose poor judgment can't see what's always with us? You're allowed to confer publicly, you know, as well as privately.
You seem to be saying Peter Lilly. But I thought that name wasn't allowed to be mentioned
on
the programme.
Between consenting adults in private, it's okay.
Ah, well, Peter Lilly, the answer.
Yes.
I've no doubt about that at all, because Francis just told me so. Why it should be a... Oh, he said the
he's
poor...
He's only an MP. How can you expect him to know this sort of thing?
Nobody's poor, he says.
Come on.
Nobody's poor.
His brain is working at a different speed.
I'm working it out. This is called the Cartesian method, which you start off with small items and then you build up a theory from
it. Right.
And the small item I have in mind is Peter Lilly. who said that there wasn't really any poverty because there was clean water available to everybody.
That's right.
Though not as far as I can make out for us here this evening, but apart from...
This was Peter Lilly who said the poor aren't really poor at all. In fact, poor people are exactly the same as rich ones, except they have a lot less money. Mr. Lilly rejected United Nations anti-poverty measures on the grounds that among Britain's poor, many have both an inside toilet and a phone. But that's what comes of living in a telephone box. Andy, here's a piece of music for you.
Champagne Charlie is my name. Champagne drinking is my game. There's no drink as good as fizz, fizz, fizz. I'll drink every drop there is, it's. All round town it is the same. I pop, 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 I rose to fame. I'm the idol of the barmaids. And Champagne Charlie is my name.
You don't need me to tell you that that was Tommy Trinder singing Champagne Charlie. The question is, who popped a cork because he didn't have any champagne?
Yes, I do know this one. This is the story that there was a photograph of John Prescott enjoying himself at some awards bash, and for reasons best known to themselves, the Standard, I believe it was, decided to treat the photograph with a computer in such a way that it looked like he was partaking of champagne when in fact it was a bottle of Beck's Lager. And it was to make some laboured point about he'd made a speech saying he was really middle class or something. But I think the important thing about this story, which I read in one of the rags, was that in a profile on Max Hastings, I learnt that he was a shooting enthusiast who had once shot Barbara Cartland's favourite duck.
Which he was wearing at the time.
And I mean... But isn't it a great mental picture? What does Barbara Cartland's big pink fluffy perfume duck? Anyway, so obviously being pretty mad, I don't know whether he sanctioned it or whether it was some over enthusiastic sub who thought it would be a wizard wheeze to do it. But they airbrushed it out, and John Prescott complained, and he's got them over a barrel really, start interfering with photographs like that. Could do anything really.
This was John Prescott, whose photo was altered by the Evening Standard. Labour officials first spotted foul play after spotting a photo of Mr. Prescott looking lean, sexy and athletic. Tony Blair said he was distressed to see the faked photo of a cabinet colleague under the heading Champagne Socialist, claiming the paper must have airbrushed in the socialist. Anyway, Alan, who shouldn't throw stones to avoid the glass house?
Oh, he's on about the cats with cystitis. That was a wonderful story in the Telegraph. Do you know a third of all cats with cystitis have got it from stress? And it comes from living with people.
Hold on.
The papers for this programme.
Hold on.
I think this is about Colchester, home of the oyster. Do you know a third of all oysters have cystitis? Comes with terror out of being eaten. He's after me, Pearl.
Well, they can get counts.
This takes us back to the great days of Willie Whitelaw. This is the short, sharp shock. And all these young people who are hot-wiring cars and generally behaving badly are going to be taken to Colchester and inducted into a sort of sub-army, which is to say that they will have no responsibilities, they will just learn to be tough, hard and beastly. And when they're ready, after their short, sharp shock, they will be chucked out and be twice as tough.
Anne Widdicombe says the system is based around three elements: discipline, training and education. And if it works there, they might try it in other places, like schools. Anyway, the scores at the end of round two are still tied at 8-8. We start round three with a cutting from the Independent.
Coventry City Council defended its decision to make Good Friday a normal working day as part of planned cutbacks. Particular controversy was caused by the decision of the council's crematorium to open on Good Friday for the first time. Gary Marshall, the council's head of bereavement services, said, "By being open on Good Friday, 16 bereaved families will be able to enjoy Easter without the worry of a funeral next Wednesday."
defend my colleagues in Coventry. There are some precedent for Easter funerals, aren't there? I mean, think about it. There was one before.
Roy, have a listen to this. Well, that, surprisingly enough, was called The Scarlet and Grey, and it was played by the Band of the Irish Guards. And your question is, whose strip is just a rip-off?
Manchester United Football Club.
Right.
Who, losing to Southampton last week, changed out of their sort of, I'm not sure whether it's battleship grey, I think more field grey, of the Wehrmacht grey. Oh, yes. And Mr. Ferguson, whose word must never be questioned, said it wasn't because they were superstitious, it was because they couldn't be seen in grey and they could be seen in blue and white stripes, which didn't account for the fact that as well as changing their shirts, they changed their socks from blue and white into grey the other way round. Fortunately, they still lost 3-1.
Yes. A happy ending there.
Absolutely.
But this is outrageous. I only heard about this today. I want to know, what was the ref doing? Because as I understand it, you're not allowed to change your kit at half-time, are you? Because
you can if you're Manchester United.
Well, quite, yeah. Yeah, but it wasn't at Old Trafford.
They asked for admission, and the thought of it, I mean, there's 11 footballers losing 3-0 at half-time, and instead of being told how to win the game, they're all taking their clothes off and changing.
They're a bunch of pufters, you have to say. Man United. Also, are we, you know, I don't like to sound cynical, but are we completely sure that this wasn't the commercial department saying, actually, if we change at half-time at every away game, we can flog 44 away strips next season?
This is Manchester United, who've changed their grey shirts, claiming they couldn't see each other. Ex-players like George Best agreed, although in his day, if you had trouble seeing your teammates on the pitch, it was because you just had 6 pints of lager. Andy, your question now. Who wheeled out their turn of the century?
I read this one. It was in a paper that washed up on the beach. Right, well, I've seen a computer animation of one of those very worthwhile Millennium projects.
Oh.
Where apparently all the money from the lottery that goes towards the Millennium Commission is going to go towards putting up a huge wheel, which is obviously what London needs. We need a big wheel by the river, because the river is always... I've often looked at the Thames and thought, what this river needs is a 500-foot-high wheel next to it.
You're absolutely right. You know, it's the best way, when you get to the top of it, if it's 500 feet, to see. There's no other way of seeing all the inner-city deprivation.
Yeah.
Breaking down schools... Yeah. Potholes in the roads, that's what it's there.
That we could have put the money.
We could have put the money.
Yeah, but and apparently it's a 500-foot-high Ferris wheel powered by the Thames. People are going to come from miles around to go up in this thing at a pretty slow rate, I would have thought. And there's concern that a 500-foot-high wheel may not be in keeping with the rest of the architecture.
Well, they'll knock down St. Paul's.
I think you'll look straight past it myself. I think it'll blend in completely. You might even mistake it for part of the Shell building, you know.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if they'd said, why don't we turn London into this huge dodgem reek? And we'll have the Ferris wheel, we'll have rubber bumpers on all these cars, and everyone can whiz about on these things going boink.
That's right.
Well, that'd be much too exciting, because it is also a monument to Virginia Bottomley, so it seems quite fitting to have something that goes absolutely nowhere and leaves you feeling rather dizzy.
Well, apparently it's a very good wheeze, because when they've built this Ferris wheel on the banks of the Thames, you will be able to see as far as Tunbridge Wells.
Gosh.
So that's worth waiting 1,000 years for.
Yeah.
People in Tunbridge Wells will say, I'm
being overlooked. They'll be on to the council saying, there's a man in London looking into my gun.
Well, we haven't heard from you for a bit, Alan. Here's a question. How might water come over underwater?
Are we going to be importing water from somewhere else? I don't know where it's from or where it's going, but that's clearly there in the question. It's worth 2 points of anybody's money. Are we getting it from France?
You are.
I thought we were.
Uh-huh.
The French are passing their water to us.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Go round and round in a bucket on a big wheel.
Exactly. Sorry.
You mean we've built a hole, a dry hole, for billions of pounds under the communal water we've got. And what's going to come through it is water from the other side.
That's right.
And you're saying we've not been stitched up by the frogs. Is he going straight to Yorkshire, this stuff?
No, I don't know where it's going, but I know where it's coming from. It is coming from France.
It's bloody Perrier. I'm going to send it straight back.
It's going to be lemon-flavoured, isn't it?
This refers to a plan to alleviate the drought by pumping French water to England through the Channel Tunnel. The shuttle operators said this won't interfere with their services at all, but their tickets will include a free car wash. Anyway, let me tell you that the scores at the end of round three are still tied at 12-all. Francis, here's a piece of music for you. Short shorts by the Royal Teens, that one. Which type fit may have shortcomings?
Well, this isn't Claire short short, is it?
No,
it's an academic. Have you noticed the silly season has started all this week? Papers just full of very dubious sounding surveys from obscure academics saying that assertive women make men impotent, or that caring men make women impotent, and lots of things involving mice and frogs and goodness knows what. And this was yet another of these academics, and that health food is bad for you, that was another. Nice. This is a man at, I think, Hull University or somewhere, who, or possibly London, who could tell, who says that those very tight lycra shorts that athletes wear these days are bad for you. If you wear them often enough, strange things happen to your chassis, your undercarriage, and you develop unsightly growths. I think it's known as the Linford Christie syndrome.
This is the shop news for wearers of cycle shorts. Not only do you look ridiculous, you might also be damaging your health. Devotees of the figure-hugging shorts range from famous sportsmen to the Princess of Wales, or from one side of the bed to the other. Roy, what emergency turned out to be child's play?
Oh, a child who didn't want to go to bed phoned the police and asked them to arrest his mother, his
That's
father.
Just an everyday story, happens all the time.
Unfortunately, the police being what they are, they didn't arrive until breakfast time the next morning. Don't look at me for any more, for heaven's sake.
No, I you've done wonderfully well answering
it so
briskly.
I thought so myself.
Be kind of
new Labour, new answers.
That's it.
That's what we want.
It'll all be different in a year's time, as I keep saying. It'll all be different in a year's time. Police will be around before you phone them in a year's time.
We just pop round on the off chance, Governor.
Chief Inspector Mandelson will be knocking on the door.
This concerns five-year-old Christopher Dighton, who dialed 999 when his mother said she'd throw his toys away if he didn't tidy them up. Local police were on the scene in a flash to reassure him that she wasn't really going to throw Teddy out of the window, although he might accidentally fall down the stairs. Later, they said it would be unreasonable to charge young Christopher with wasting police time, and besides, the evening wasn't entirely fruitless, as Paddington Bear has now been deported back to Peru. Alan, your question now. Why is being fat and lazy the way to win the rat race?
No one else in the world would know this question. There is a thing called the naked mole rat.
Yes.
Which actually looks like a piece of Linford Christie. It was in the Daily Telegraph. And it's like a very large maggot with a head like a tennis ball.
And teeth.
And they have discovered... I mean, this was another
You're
one
You're not suggesting some strange aberration,
no,
are you?
But it's another one. As Francis quite rightly says, this was a week, apart from the cats with cystitis, this was a week where there was a lot of bizarre stuff. And anyway, At some American university, in the Land-Grant Commission University of Tuscaloosa, funded by Coca-Cola or whatever, a group of research scientists have discovered that the naked mole rat survives and indeed flourishes and thrives despite the fact that it is overweight, stupid, doesn't even know it's a mole rat, has great difficulty mating, will mate with almost anything in the hope that it might be a female mole rat, and spends the whole of its life not actually moving further than a foot from where it was born. So it just waits for things to come towards it and more or less mates with them if it thinks that's what it's doing. And then it stops. But it has survived for millions of years. And there's hope for all of us.
I was going to say that.
It's a couch potatoes, couch potatoes.
Right. Overweight, stupid,
bald,
mates with anything.
Yes.
Sounds like a great life to me.
Well, we've come more or less to the end, but before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis, have we got a cutting?
Yes, I have, Barry. It's from the Lancaster Guardian. A large quantity of food has been stolen from the George's restaurant at Lancaster University's Chaplaincy Centre. Stolen were 12 1-litre packs of orange juice, 3 kilograms of Knorr Fusilli pasta, 5 kilograms of Knorr lasagna, 5 kilograms of basmati rice, and a 750-gram tin of coffee. Police suspect they might be looking for a vegetarian.
Thank you, Francis. Roy?
This is from the Daily Telegraph, a piece headed, Brussels pays £200,000 to save prostitutes. It says the money will not be going directly into the prostitutes' pockets, but to groups which encourage them to lead a better life. We will be training them for new positions in hotels.
Andy.
Right, well, I'm very grateful to Gareth J. Corks, who sent us this from the Manchester Evening News. The headline is, Wanted, a Hangman. The government in Zimbabwe is looking for a new executioner after their old hangman died without passing on his skills. He must have the equivalent of an O-level in physics and be polite and well-spoken.
Alan.
Well, here, Barry, is your brass-inlaid mahogany farewell cutting. From the European. And it says, the manufacturers of France's biggest-selling processed cheese, La Vache qui Rit, are considering changing the famous label, which shows a laughing cow. Spokesman Monsieur Raoul Fournier said, when the founders created the product 50 years ago, they wanted shoppers to think our cow was laughing because it was happy. You're ahead of me. But today there is a risk they will think it is laughing because it is mad.
Well, thank you all. Let's look at the final scores, but it's not far to look because Francis and Roy and Alan and Andy have tied at 16 all, a draw. Well played. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Scottish Big Issue, sent in by John Barker of Lanarkshire.
In Sydney, 120 men named Henry attacked each other during a My Name is Henry convention. Henry Panty of Canberra accused Henry Papp of Sydney of not being a Henry at all, but in fact an Angus. It was a lie, exclaimed Mr. Papp. I'm a Henry and always will be. Whereupon Henry Papp attacked Henry Panty, whilst two other Henrys, Jones and Dyer, attempted to pull them apart. Several more Henrys, Smith, Calderwood, Andrews, became involved. And soon the entire convention descended into a giant fistfight. The brawl was eventually broken up by riot police led by a man named Shane.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Andy Hamilton and Roy Hattersley. The chairman was Barry Took and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and Adam Bostock-Smith. The producer was Aled Evans.